I would like to look at equanimity and what does it mean to be equanimous? Because I think there is what we think it is and what it could be and what it means. Because often I have the feeling that we think equanimity either should be that I am above it all, one day I will do enough meditation that it will be like I am floating on my little clouds, and whatever happens, it's below, who cares? I am fine on my little clouds. That's one way. Another way to look at equanimity is that no matter what happens, I can endure. So it's not fun, but I can endure. I can kind of tense up and it's okay, I can be with it. And personally, I would like to look at one aspect that is important of equanimity. To me, equanimity is one of the qualities that helps us to creatively engage with our life. And I think one of the aspects is acceptance. And I would say acceptance as experiential knowledge of our situation. Because if we think of equanimity as just finally we get on our little cloud and we stay there and who cares, to me, I'm not really interested. Because it feels a little more like indifference when I feel that the equanimity we're talking about here is infused with the listening, with the loving kindness. But in order to be equanimous, in a way, we have to be aware. And we, in a way, have to be aware. But when is it I feel equanimous? And to me, equanimous would mean that in the situation, we are stable, balanced, and open. And openness, we've already talked this morning with loving kindness, with listening. So here I will look a little more this afternoon about stability and balance. But first, maybe more about acceptance. And I found this quote yesterday, because yesterday I went, I had this interesting interlude yesterday because I went to Conscious TV, which is in the back of Vauxhall in London, and they have this small program, very sweet program, about trying to talk about meditation and spirituality on TV, which is more like internet TV. So you can get it on Sky if you can find it and if you have Sky. And we were talking also about books, books I would recommend. And there is a book I recommend, which is in my recommended book list on my website, which is called Being Bodies. And it's a book about women talking about the experience of meditation, but very much in practical terms. And one of the person, it's like a compilation of different women and their experience. And one of them is about this lady, Joan Sutherland, who has had an illness where she has problem with immunity because of a toxic shock. And so she, before she was really healthy and everything was fine, and then suddenly she's not healthy and she's not fine. And so the whole thing is talking about how to be with that difficulty. And then at some point, that's what she said about acceptance. I could see that the truest acceptance of my circumstances was not the same as resignation to my fate. Acceptance can be dynamic. It can include the possible as well as the actual. So I think when I talk about acceptance here, I am not talking about resignation. Because for me, resignation is generally heavy. I resign myself, I am stuck, it's terrible, and there is this really heavy feeling. When I think with meditative acceptance, we're talking about, in a way, really knowing what's going on, really fully acknowledging what is going on, what is in our experience, but not reducing ourselves to that. And so, in a way, here she is saying that, yes, I have this difficult condition, But I am not just that difficult condition. I am more than one of the conditions that form me. And also she could see that acceptance was actually acceptance of what is now, but also acceptance of what could be possible. Because in resignation it's like, nothing can be done, I'm not going to do anything. When here with this creative acceptance, it's called, okay, this is difficult, but how can I be with this situation? How can I deal with it? How can I creatively engage with it? But also, something I wanted to share with you was a sutta, but first to see, what are we doing in meditation? In meditation, we're trying to cultivate this focusing, this anchoring, which, as I mentioned, will help us to come back again and again, so will help us not to feed the habits, bring them back to their creative functioning. So, in a way, the focusing, the anchoring, will help us with the stability, will help us with kind of being more aware of what's going on. And then there is another aspect, which is looking deeply, experiential inquiry, which will again help us to go inside the experience. So it's not having an idea about the experience or what happened in the past, what could happen later, but right now, how does it feel and how does it change? To me, this is a key question that really is one of the key to acceptance, is that in accepting of what something is happening, there is, at the same time from a Buddhist point of view, this knowledge, this can change. How is it going to change? And recently I had this experience, doing meditation and various things, then, you know, one becomes generally more stable and balanced over time. And it was a few months or two ago, and my sister and I, we took my mother for shopping, and she found things, and I brought her back, and so all that was very happy feeling. We were happy to be together, the shopping was successful, to find things for her, and we came back. But within that energy of the happiness, I suddenly went into overdrive. And I decided, since we bought this thing, then we could kind of put them in the cupboard, but wouldn't it be nice if the cupboard was totally rearranged and then everything would be better, and then taking everything out and then putting them somewhere else, and my mother being, do we have to do this now, and being like a little overwhelmed. Which then brought my happy feeling really down. And then instead you're starting to have unpleasant feeling too. So I go back upstairs, because I live upstairs, she lives downstairs, I go back upstairs. And you know, my husband comes by and I'm like a little mean to him. Then I think, but he's not done anything. I wonder, but, and I feel this really funny, negative, mean feeling, which I have not felt in ages, years. And I thought, what's going on here? So in a way, the awareness was to see something is going on. Something is making me acting in a different way, feeling in a different way. And it was kind of like I thought, okay, what's going on here? So I went inside my body, inside the feeling, and I could feel this kind of like seeping, negative things, bubbling, kind of looking for somewhere to go, you know? And I thought, wait a minute, I could see that, you know, if I let it bubble, then it would go to many different things. You know, my husband, my mother, my emails, whatever. It would kind of like seep out. But it had nothing to do with it whatsoever. And then I realized, no, it was just this kind of moving from one thing to another, and then this creating that. And then I could see the possibility for the amplification, which would be kind of unpleasant. And then instead of going with it, I came back to what I would call the accepting position, creative acceptance. Okay, this is what's going on. How long is this going to last? If I don't identify with it and if I don't kind of, you know, amplify with it. And actually it left very fast. Within 2 hours it was gone. And that's what it showed me, that in a way our equanimity rests a lot upon the awareness we have of what's going on and how we are moved by what's going on. And that's why I think what is important is not so much that no matter what happens, I don't care, but more when things happen, are we aware of the feelings they invoke, they provoke, and how those feelings or the thought can seep out and then lead to other things. And that's why I wanted to share, because I think sometimes this sutta is kind of, is a short sutta. It's a Sangharava Sutta, translated, you could say, the hindrances. And here, you have this young man who comes to the Buddha, and he says, I have some problem. And this is his problem. Why is it good Gotama? How does it come about that sometimes sacred words I have long studied are not clear to me, not to mention those I have not studied? And how is it too that sometimes all the sacred words that I have not so studied are clear to me, not to mention those I have studied? So basically he's saying, you know, I am a spiritual person, I'm interested in, you know, sacred things, and I read the scripture, I learn from the scripture, and then sometimes it has no effect whatsoever. Like, you know, I look at them, it's like I am not there for those sacred words. And then sometimes it's so clear. And then the Buddha, again being very practical, he said, you know, look at what's going on. Look at how you feel in the moment you feel clear, and in the moment you feel unclear. And then he has these five different descriptions, analogy, metaphor, which are really beautiful. And he says first, if a man is really taken over, overwhelmed, possessed by his wanting, by his desiring something, by his, I want this, then he cannot, his mind becomes unclear, and then he cannot see what is to his own benefit and the benefit of himself, of others, and both. And then nothing is clear to him. And then he said, imagine if you have a bowl of water who is mixed with dye. So you have a bowl of water, but in it has been mixed either a blue dye or a red dye or any kind of really dark dye. If a man with a good eyesight were to look at the reflection of his own face in it, he would not really see it as it is, because it would be covered, it would be kind of colored. So he would have like a kind of weird, darkish reflection, which he could not really see very clearly, his face. And he said, this is in the same way, when we are overtaken by this kind of desire, I must have this. If I don't have this, my life is finished, or whatever it is. So we can, in a way, stirred up by this. Then it's like if we were looking, trying to see our reflection in colored water. It would not be clear. Then again, if a man dwell with his heart possessed and overwhelmed with ill will, so somebody is really, feel really aggressive and really kind of like, you know, unhappy, irritated, and basically looking for somebody to have difficulty with. Often that's what happens. You feel impatient, irritated, and then you look for somebody. And the Buddha said, imagine a bowl of water heated on a fire, boiling up and bubbling over. Think of your kettle. You put your kettle on, the water doesn't move, and then suddenly it bubbles. you know. And then if you come over that water and you try to see your reflection in it, you can't see it because it's all moving. And so it's kind of like, how does it feel when we agitate it? And it's like, we can't see clearly. There is too much stirring, too much agitation. Then he said, imagine a man dwelt with his heart possessed and overwhelmed by sloth and torpor. And this is also another difficulty. Sometimes we just like, I mean, we just unclear because actually we don't have any energy. And so it's kind of really hard to kind of like be really here, be really kind of clear to what's going on. And then here he said it's like the bowl of water is covered with slimy moss and water plant. And then again you cannot see anything. Then you have worry and flurry. You know, you worry about things, you're anxious about things, and again, you won't have the clarity. And then he said it's like a bowl of water ruffled by the wind, so that the water trembled, eddied, and rippled. Then the last one, doubt and wavering. We're not sure about this, should I do this, but if I do that, what about that, and what about this, and I can't do this, and it's kind of like, we can't decide. We're really kind of wavering, doubting. And he said, it's like, imagine a bowl of water, agitated, stirred up, muddied, put in a dark place. Then you could not see very much. You could not try to see your reflection because you couldn't even find the bowl of water. And then the bowl of water being agitated with mud, it was even very unclear. So basically what he is saying here is kind of in a way, what is it that causes us not to be equanimous? To me, that's what a little is about. And basically, the example is about how does it feel? So there are different conditions. We can be really kind of lack of energy, we can be aggressive, we can be doubtful, we can be, I want this. And so generally this often makes it that we get overwhelmed or we get disturbed. And if these things don't happen, generally we're fine. I mean, Buddhist meditators are really fine when nothing happens. I mean, you know, if nothing happens, it's very easy to be equanimous. You know? I mean, I had a friend many years ago who, when he went on to an island in Thailand on his own with a dog, he had fantastic meditation experience, but really amazing, you know, equanimity, my kind of, you know, plus 10. But then every time he came back to the monastery, within 2 minutes, he got into trouble with people. So equanimous minus 10. And he came to our temple to try to see if he could do something about it, which did not really work, because I had to often rescue him from difficulty with people. But at least he tried. He could see that there was a problem. And so, yes, it's easy to be equanimous if everything is fine. But in a way, the question of equanimity is also about, in a way, if we are equanimous, to know it. I think that's important to know. If you're at peace, if you're balanced, if you're stable, how does it feel? So it's not just an idea. I think it's very important to see what we're trying to do with the meditation is not just an idea, but it's about how do I feel? And so to me, the meditation is a lot about developing stability, openness, and balance, so that then if a strong desire arises, if aggressivity arises, if doubt arises, if lack of energy arises, if worry arises, because they will arise, we are a human being. So we will, the meditation is not about becoming robots, and that we kind of like, you know, we always is joyful, happy, peaceful person, no matter what happens. We are human beings. I mean, even the Buddha, I mean, everybody nowadays makes the Buddha often to be like this mythical person who floats about and nothing attains it. But even he, if he had a pain toward the end of his life, he's very ill, and he says it's very painful. Or if he has a trouble with his cousin who want to take over, he kind of, you know, the cousin say, I want, you know, you're really getting old, and, you know, I should take your place, you know, I can do this. And then the Buddha says, well, I would not let, even give my teaching to my to the people I really respect the most, my two main disciples, let alone a pig or spittle like you. So obviously he did not think the cousin was great. And he was not going to give him everything. So I think, in a way, we have to see equanimity as creative, wise equanimity. So in a way, when there is this thing which ruffle, disturb, stir the bowl of water, how can, in a way, you still have the ruffle and the thing happening, but not be so ruffled by it, not so extinguished by it, not so excited by it? And I think that's what we're trying to do when we develop the meditation, is actually develop what I would call an inner posture, a whole physical, mental, inner posture, where in a way we can have a refuge, where we can find some stability, where we can find some balance, where we can find some openness. So that although things are difficult and it doesn't feel fantastic, we can handle it. We can creatively engage with it. So in a way, in order to be able to do that, I would say the first thing, and that's why there is so much emphasis on the awareness, in a way we have to be aware of what's going on instead of being taken over by what's going on. And I know it's kind of like a subtle change to me feeling bad and then sipping it out. And me saying, wait a minute, what is going on in my body, in my heart, in my mind? And in that moment, really knowing it. And knowing it in such a way that then I would see it in context. Instead of having that funny negative feeling, identifying with it, this is the way the world is, this is the way I am, and in a way acting out of it. So it doesn't mean that when I see it, that the feeling is necessarily going to go. But at that moment of seeing it, of being really aware of it, then I can be clear about it. As the Buddha said, then you can be clear about it. And then you can have that knowledge that you've developed through the meditation and ask the question, which to me is part, very important part of equanimity. How long is this going to last? Because if it doesn't last very long, it doesn't really matter. But if it lasts a long time, then in a way you have to look, what are the conditions? What is going on? And so I would say that the acceptance is a way to go and inquire into the conditions. And to me that would be one of the, in a way, what we're doing in the meditation by cultivating the concentration and the inquiry together, which lead to more quietness and clarity, which leads to more creative awareness. And I would say the two aspects of that creative awareness are acceptance and transformation. That in a way, before you accept, there cannot be transformation. And I think that's what this quote from John Sutherland is about, to see the difference between resignation and acceptance. And that in acceptance, there is clarity. That in that moment of acceptance, you say, yes, this is what's going on. This is what is happening. And once you accept and see what's going on, know what's going on, then you can inquire, how did it arise? How am I experiencing this? what can I do about it? Should I just be with it? Because really, in this moment, there is nothing I can do about it. I mean, this is the way I felt yesterday. I am, you know, in the car, in the plane, on the way to England to go to this TV thing, this day today, tomorrow I'm teaching, after tomorrow I'm teaching. And I kind of start to feel a sore throat, which is not the best thing to go and do all these things. And I think, well, let's see what happens. You know, let's see how it's going. I mean, I go and buy lamb soup and, you know, some pastil to help out. And think, let's see what happens. Instead of thinking, this is terrible, this is awful, how am I going? Not at all. I mean, what's the point? What's the point? That's what is happening. Now, how can I handle it? How can I be with it? How can I? Because if you think, oh, I must, you know, I'm going to be on TV, if it's a minor TV, you know, I must have, you know, my best voice, otherwise, you know, this is not representative. I mean, you could go into lots of proliferation. This is the thing. I think what equanimity does is de-amplification. This is, in a way, what we're cultivating in the meditation. Not that things are different than they appear, but that we don't amplify them more than it needs to be, so that there is not this proliferation, and just okay. And to me, it kind of equanimity is a little equal to partly simplicity. Keep it simple. What is really going on now? What is the least you can do about it? And then let's get on with it. Because often we have this way to just kind of elaborate. This is one of our difficulties. Sometimes it's good to elaborate, because we can really imagine things and it can be very creative. But sometimes with the proliferation, we can really frighten ourselves, or frighten others, that even worse. And so in a way, the equanimity, I think, is a way to, instead of going immediately in the amplification, it's actually, instead of doing that, it's kind of like deepening. It's kind of going inside ourselves. This is a difficult situation. How can I find stability right now? How can I find balance right now? Not that, again, one has to be careful. Sometimes we're kind of literal. I want, you know, 100% balance. But actually, sometimes we just need 10% or 20% balance to actually anchor us in a bit of equanimity, which then can help us in that situation. But if we think I need to have 100% equanimity to be able to deal with it, then we might have to wait a long time. So I think to be careful with that often just a little bit is enough. It doesn't necessarily mean that we need to have the super duper number one equanimity, but actually kind of explore, how can I bring a little bit of it? And so what I like to suggest we do now, the first exercise, and later on I'll introduce the second exercise. The first one is actually meditation with the breath, because I think it's important to see that the different tools of awareness have a little different effect. And I would say the listening helps us with the openness, the loving kindness helps us with the warmth, the seeing of others. And the breath, I think, is really part of stability. Because the thing with the breath is that it's very connected to our physiological system. And actually, if we learn to be comfortable with our breath, if we learn to use it as an anchor, it can be actually a good way to stabilize. Or a good way to know when we're not stable, and to be aware, as soon as we do that, then we kind of start to be a little kind of anxious. And this is why, I mean, they use it for policemen, they use it for firemen. There is a lot of people who use the breath as a mean to, in a way, quieten the system if you are in an urgent, kind of little dramatic situation. So that's what I would suggest that we do. that we kind of pay attention to the breath this afternoon for the first sitting and the walking, and to be aware that when we are aware of the breath, we're not trying to control the breath. This is not a yoga exercise, but we try just to be aware of the breath in the experience, so anchoring in the sensation of the breath. So you can have different focus. You can focus on the nostril, the air going in, going out. You can focus in the abdomen, expanding, contracting. Or you can just focus on the whole rhythm of the breath. And one way to really do it so that you don't do the breath and it doesn't become mechanical, because you don't want to be there. That's not the idea. We, in a way, want to rest on the breath as it happens. And is to, in a way, wait for the breath to happen. When we kind of sitting in meditation, instead of I'm doing the breath, more letting it happen, and then in a way following it. So that what I would suggest for the first sitting this afternoon. And maybe first we stand up for just a few